timeless music, radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea.
No.
How are you doing? And later on, switch on TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. Now how are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To educate, they fabricate. And we sit back till
Avenger. Rick Adams is on.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, let's rejoin this documentary on Broken Promises, and let's see if we can go a few minutes to get a better feel as to what's going on here with, you see, the power of the Rothschild family in Europe and in the Middle East over Britain. Okay, let's go back here.
In Europe, Germany's rapid advance was halted by Britain and France along the Western Front. In the East, Russia's war against Germany and Austria-Hungary also reached deadlock. The powerful weapons of the industrial age were killing thousands of men in the trenches of every army.
All of the leading powers expected the war to be over within a matter of months. So in that sense, all of them are surprised at the end of 1914, when not merely is the war going on, but it shows every sign of being likely to go on for a very long time. At that point, they begin to think about new ways of winning the war.
Britain's Prime Minister Asquith felt that with the stalemate in Europe, it was essential to widen the conflict. Together with Foreign Secretary Lord Grey, Minister for War Lord Kitchener, and the First Lord of the Admiralty Winston Churchill, they masterminded a complex strategy to undermine the Central Powers.
This was a global war, and the British saw the Middle East very much in a global context. The traditional British preference for sideshows, as people unfavourably call it, the indirect strategy, the way of attacking the soft underbelly, as Churchill called it, of the enemy. And the soft underbelly was seen to be Turkey.
Britain's secret plan involved, on the one hand, a military diversion, and on the other, a devious use of diplomacy through bribery, subversion, and double dealing. All these devices focused on the enemy's weakest link, Turkey's Ottoman Empire.
Diplomacy in general has always had a secret dimension to it, but where discretion ends and conspiracy begins is an open question. But during the period up to and during the First World War, there was a particularly intense set of negotiations and discussions between the major imperial powers, between the French, the Russians and the British in particular, cutting in the Italians as well, about what would they do when the war was over and when the Ottoman Empire broke up.
The British government hoped that by striking a deal over the spoils of war, it would strengthen the alliance against the Central Powers. Amongst the Allies, Russia had long sought access to the Mediterranean. In a secret treaty of March 1915, Britain and France offered what was to the Tsar a prize of vital geopolitical importance, Constantinople.
It is that key outlet into the wider world and into the Mediterranean. And it is the one thing, of course, the British and the French have been attempting to prevent the Russians from achieving. So this is a complete volte-face. This is the British, the French and the Russians coming to an agreement over something which was, up to this point, almost inconceivable.
Italy's King Vittorio Emmanuel was another target for bribery. Britain, France and Russia tried to tempt Italy, a pro-German state, to join the Allies. In April 1915, a secret treaty offered Italy a substantial bit of Ottoman real estate in Anatolia.
Again, it's another power coming into the equation and being offered territorial advancement which in normal circumstances would have been quite inconceivable.
The bribe worked. Italy joined the Allies and declared war on the Central Powers in August 1915. But Britain's strategy to undermine the enemy via the Ottoman Empire also required subversion. By using domestic opposition to weaken, maybe even destroy it, Britain exploited a new movement sweeping through the empire, nationalism.
Nationalism in the sense of believing that there are peoples with a clear cultural identity and that these people should live independent. That idea spread to the Middle East as to other parts of the world in the latter part of the 19th century. So you had the beginnings in the Ottoman Empire of a Turkish nationalism.
This came to a head when the Young Turks took power in a coup in 1908 and started to impose their language and culture on the Arabs of the empire. But this only reawakened an interest amongst Arabs in their own heritage. A thousand years before, Arabs had brought the technology and literature of the East to the West, and their religion, Islam, had encompassed much of Asia, North Africa, and southwestern Europe. The idea of recovering that historic grandeur had remained in the consciousness of Arab intellectuals. By the start of the First World War, the antagonism between Arab and Turk had increased.
The very fact that the Turks were saying, we want to have a unified empire, meant the Arabs said, wait a minute, we're not part of this. So all of this literary and nationalistic revival then took a much more political form, and therefore you got the emergence of Arab nationalism.
They had arrived at the conclusion that remaining in the Ottoman Empire was becoming hopeless, that they couldn't actually share power with the Turks. And they began thinking of having their own state.
By the summer of 1915, British intelligence confirmed that the Arab nationalist movement was the breakthrough the government was looking for. Britain and her French ally dispatched officers to sound out Arab leaders.
Both the French and the British started, you could say, seducing various local Arab leaders, that if you side with us, we'll give you your independence. So why don't you leave the Ottomans? And various people were tempted as a result. If they thought they could actually gain independence, why not side with the Europeans against the Ottomans?
The idea was to tempt the Arabs into a revolt against their Ottoman overlords and create a diversion which would tie down the Central Powers in the Middle East. Ironically, the impetus for such a diversion had come not from London, but from the Arab world. In the Hejaz, in Western Arabia, Sheriff Hussein, its ruler, was set on extending his political and geographical domain. He believed he might be able to do it with the help of the British. In turn, the British were impressed by Sheriff Hussein's family credentials as custodians of the holy places of Islam.
They call themselves Hashemites. They call the family Hashemites because that's the family or the tribe of the Prophet Muhammad. They were the Bani Hashem, the sons of Hashem. So Sharif Hussein was the leader of the Hashemites. He was the person responsible for Mecca and Medina. And although he had worked with the Ottomans before the First World War, once the First World War happened, he saw this was his chance.
A chance, too, for the British, who saw support for Sharif Hussein as a way to threaten the Sultan's hold on the Caliphate, the political leadership of the Islamic world.
The British, because they were fighting the Ottomans, and the Ottomans were claiming to be the real representatives of Islam, they wanted a counterforce. And the counterforce was represented by Sharif Hussein, being a descendant of the Prophet. But Sharif Hussein was speaking of liberating Arab lands, building a new national state. He wanted to be king of the Arabs, not simply of Arabians.
In July 1915, Sheriff Hussein smuggled a message to the British High Commissioner in Cairo, Sir Henry McMahon, offering to raise a substantial Arab force against the Ottomans in return for British support for Arab independence. In the ensuing secret correspondence between the two men, Sheriff Hussein was given to understand that he could expect British support in achieving some of his ambitions in the event of an Ottoman defeat. This letter of October the 26th, 1915, outlined the main points of the arrangement.
The actual document itself is absolutely riven with ambiguity. There's no doubt about that. The question is whether Hussein recognises that. My sense of Hussein is that he does recognise it. In other words, there is no wool being pulled over his eyes, because he's perfectly aware that if he's going to create a modern Arab empire, he's going to need some logistical, economic development, and that can only come from the outside world.
Taking Britain's assurances of support at face value, Hussein, together with his sons Faisal and Abdullah, amassed a sizable force. The new army was commanded by the young and charismatic Faisal, who had captured the imagination of the Arab masses in the quest for Arab independence. Yet even as Hussein and Faisal mobilized their troops, the British were preparing to sell them short. Back in London, in the spring of 1916, Britain was negotiating with France about the future shape of the Middle East. Behind closed doors, Sir Mark Sykes of the British Foreign Office had been meeting his French opposite number, François-Georges Picot. Britain knew it was vital to offer the French a stake in the spoils of the Ottoman Empire, should they win the war.
There was an awareness on the British side that they had made such huge sacrifices that one couldn't just ignore French ambitions, and that the French were determined to have their historical piece of the Levant.
Poring over a map of the Levant, Sykes and Picot personally drew in the areas they wished to see under their control. Their secret deal amounted to the virtual carve-up of the Middle East. In Area A for the French and Area B for the British, the imperialists intended to exercise power indirectly. They would appoint advisors and take charge of the finances in their respective spheres of influence. Then there was the area coloured blue, which was to be directly controlled by France. This included what was then known as Greater Syria, where the French traditionally had commercial and religious interests. As for the area coloured pink, known as Iraq, with its strategic ports, railways and oil, this was to be under British rule. The area coloured yellow represented Palestine and was envisaged as an international zone, except for Haifa.
What the British wanted was the oil of Iraq, and they concentrated on getting Iraq and getting away from Iraq to the Mediterranean in order to transport this oil. So they got Haifa on the Palestinian coast, and they got most of Iraq.
The Sykes-Picot agreement was a pretty shameful document, and I wouldn't attempt to defend it. But it was drawn up by people who were sort of operating under the old kind of balance of power considerations in an imperial frame of mind.
Unaware of these secret dealings behind their backs, Hussein and Faisal proclaimed independence and in June 1916 attacked the Turkish troops. The Arab revolt against the Ottomans had begun. The Turkish garrison at Mecca was soon overrun and the seaport at Jeddah seized. By 1917, Hussein and Faisal's forces had pushed north and engaged the Ottoman Turks along the Hejaz Railway. The British saw the Arab revolt as part of its strategy for creating a military diversion against the Central Powers. In a pincer movement, Britain had launched a campaign from the southwest to ensure control of the Suez Canal and the Levant. And from the southeast, it was fighting to secure the oil wells of Iraq. All this to attack the Central Powers at their weakest point, the Ottoman Empire.
The Arabs hitched their fortunes to the British. They considered themselves to be fighting with the Allies. But at the same time, they were not merged into the British army, that they continued to act as an independent army called the Northern Army.
While the Arab army advanced northwards, Britain's General Allenby had crossed the Suez Canal, and by the spring of 1917, his forces had reached the frontier of Palestine. The war in Europe, however, was still not going well for Britain. The attempted push through the German lines at the Somme had produced little territorial gain, and the cost in lives was colossal. In London, there had been a change of leadership. The new Prime Minister, Lloyd George, felt that the Allied war effort needed a fresh impetus. Although America had so far been neutral in the war, Lloyd George was convinced that could be changed. He believed there was one powerful group which might influence the American government.
Lloyd George thought that the American decision whether to join or not would depend critically on public opinion, and the Jewish support could tilt the scales in one direction or the other.
You've got to remember that the British Foreign Office greatly overestimate the political power of international Jewry, particularly the wealthy, financial and commercial Jewish elites.
What is extraordinary about this situation is that here you have particularly the British seeing the Jewish world as one collective monolithic entity. And in that sense, they start looking at the role of the Jews in the war as being something which might be important. And from the point of view of the Allies, something else quite remarkable, this monolithic collective entity is pro-German.
Many Jews in the upper echelons of German society did indeed have close connections to the Kaiser's Foreign Office. A new Jewish nationalist movement, Zionism, had also been able to establish its headquarters in Berlin. Zionism had originated in the 1880s after Theodor Herzl published a book espousing the virtues of a Jewish state. This caused a sensation amongst Jewish intellectuals in Germany, Austria and Russia, who shared Herzl's outrage at the escalation of anti-Jewish sentiments.
The end of the 19th century saw the rise of anti-Semitism all over Europe, in Austria, in Germany, in France, but particularly in Eastern Europe, in Poland and in Russia. And the pogrom against the Jews in Russia gave rise to the establishment of Chovevei Tzion, the lovers of Zion, societies in a number of Russian cities who started to promote and to finance and to sponsor colonization, emigration to Palestine.
All right, I can intervene
Herzl
right now.
Came to the conclusion.
Stop here, Ken? Yeah, that's fine. You know, I wanted to stop at this point. I needed to go a little bit just so you'd get the background, which many of you are familiar with, but many are not. Most Americans are not familiar with the duplicity of this Rothschild-owned government in Britain and the influence they were having in Germany. Now, I'm glad he brought that out. What was the excuse for creating these dual promises was simply money. The Arabs were being used, obviously, by the British government to accomplish their war ambitions. The result, of course, was two promises to two different people. And guess who prevailed? Why, the evil figs. Naturally, those who call themselves Jews would have to prevail over the Arabs in order for them to create that occupation state known as Israel. So you see, the background to all of this is absolutely breathtaking when you see it was all predicted in Scripture. And the birthright tribes of Britain would lose that land again that was given to them. They would blow it. And the terrorism that drove them out came from these Kenites, you see, the sons and daughters of Cain, to drive them out through terror. This has always been their way. Terror, murder, butchery, slaughter. So, there you go, folks. You have the fig tree generation established in 1948. Britain did it again. Britain was used, the government of Britain, not the people, but the government of Britain was occupied, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Rothschild banks. And as you can see, the Italians and Germans already waging war against each other. World War I was the classic Kenite brother against brother fight. Russia, Germany, France, England, all of them, the Turkish Empire. Now, the Turkish Empire, we know, has been a crypto-Jewish empire, and that's where you had the slaughter of the Armenians, which hasn't been mentioned here. Well, we have the genocide against the Armenian people. It was in 1915, right? And, you know, all of this is a backdrop to what would follow with the breakup of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, the Ottoman Empire in the Middle East, and then the British exit, after the British made the promise to two peoples, two opposite nationalists. You had Arab nationalism, and you had this fanatical Zionist nationalism at odds. Here we are today, 2019-2020 era, and we are right where we started from. All the wars of Europe over the Middle East, over the European capitals, now transferred to America's shoulders. So now you can see why America, Jacob's seed here in this country, would be burdened in the very last days with this evil generation. You see, this evil fig tree. We're all intertwined. And this is where Esau and Jacob come to loggerheads, Russia and America, the Russian central government, those who still are in government capacities, and I don't trust Putin as far as I could spit. Believe me, I can't spit very far. But Putin is, as far as I'm concerned, a servant of the Esauites and the Kenites. He's doing his darndest to play the good cop right now, while America is aligned with the bad cops. We've seen that happen many, many times before, haven't we? Well, again, it's all about who controls the banks and therefore the countries of the world. So there's no getting around it. Trump is right smack dab in the middle of all of this, sitting on his pompous and Pompeo's pompous posterior, making these quick decisions, supposedly without any knowledge, without any consultation with anybody, not even Congress, but not even, most importantly, those around him. Ah, the Secretary of Defense. Everybody's surprised. Well, that's a bunch of baloney. Joint Chiefs of Staff, they tell him what to do. They are controlled, just as others, by the Council on Foreign Relations and the people that staff it. We know who's in control. It's the Rothschild-Rockefeller cabal. So, again, Trump is nothing but a stooge on a stage, and America is ready to fall into the orchestra pit. That's where we are today. So Persia enters in, ancient Persia, modern, Persia. The war with Iraq helped open the path for Persia, for Iran, to show its muscle. Now we have a big embassy in Iraq that we talked about 10 years ago on this program. We talked about, why is America building the largest embassy in the world in Iraq? The answer is pretty obvious. Obviously, for a permanent occupation, to wage war, to continue this war for peace cycle culminating in the last of the nations on the PNAC document list, the Project for a New American Century, Iran. They have to be brought under this one world beast system. That is the goal, that is the target, and that is why you have this war, this conflict with the people of Iran. Iran doesn't want it. Obviously, they want a world in which they can do their thing in their neck of the woods. America should mind its business here in our neck of the woods. But see, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, all of these Adelsons and so forth, they will not allow this. They've got the money to bribe governments, to control governments, to install governments, and meanwhile the people, the idiots, think they're voting for a change. Folks, ain't going to happen. Well, folks, I know that we're almost at the last half hour of the show, and I do want to bring on Art from Philly so he can add his 3 or 4 cents since inflation has taken its toll. And let me just say hello to Art right now. Bring him up. Hello, Art. Happy New Year.
Hello, Rick, and Happy New Year to you and the rest of RBN also.
Thank you. It's a pleasure having you once again. And you probably listened to a little bit of the documentary piece that we just played on the program. What do you think?
Well, I think it's actually pretty good to bring back history because American people have, in general, a very short memory of things in the past. And it shows how breaking up the Ottoman Empire has led to the crisis we have there and also the influence of the Rothschilds. So, you know, we're seeing it today. And like you said, we have a permanent presence in Baghdad, Iraq. And that's part of the game plan, you know, when you realize that, and, you know, whatever happened over there, you know, I wasn't there on board. You know, it's a shame they couldn't come up with a better way to deal with this. Now we got an issue where we may have a major war going on that, you know, you have to realize that Iran's under the nuclear umbrella of Russia. It's also protected by China. And if we're going to do something reasonable, which we don't know they will, the next thing will happen is we're going to see some debates go on in the United Nations, in particular the UN Security Council, to prevent a nuclear war, hopefully. But that's an unknown outcome at this point to see how that evolves. So if people want to see what happens next, follow up with the news to see where things go with the United Nations Security Council, which is the one thing the UN does that I think is important, which is to negotiate with the world powers, the nuclear powers, war and peace. So we'll see how that goes. But I think, you know, we've drawn blood, and also apparently they drew blood from us with a civilian over there. So now
well,
where do
again,
we go
from
here?
Have to remember, the genesis of this problem is the military, industrial, media, political complex. What is the United States doing in the Middle East to begin with? Well, we're not keeping peace. We're not creating a more secure, more peaceful world. Isn't that what they told us at 9/11? If we just went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan and we took out opposition in Syria and we fought ISIS that we didn't have before, and then we go after Al-Shabaab and we go after all these new terrorist organizations, then we would keep America safe. Now we're being told we're in more danger than ever before. We're being told people should leave their embassies. They should walk away from Iraq. Get out. Why? If we're creating peace, what kind of peace is it? Satan's peace, huh? Peace and safety? Uh-uh. It's all a racket. War is a racket.
It sounds like what we're doing is a Yenom plan for Israel, the greater Israel. Systematic plan.
Wow. Say that again. We're doing what? Israel's work?
Yeah, we're doing Israel's work for the Yenom plan, for the greater Israel.
Wow, the Erat Israel, huh? Sharon, there you go. We're back to Ariel Sharon. Oh, my goodness. Art, stay with me. You just latched onto something. Folks, if you want to call in, you may do so with Art and Rick together in the last half hour of today's program. Rick Adams, Uncensored.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
This so, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Whatever needs to be done, we gotta do ourselves.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. 1-800-313-9443. Art is with me. Art, the latest headlines that are being pummeled at us in the last 3 hours. Missiles hit near the U.S. Embassy in Iraq, a base that houses troops after the general's slaying. Well, you know, this is what we expect. Alleged tit-for-tat. Iran is behind it. We're having more blasts at the embassy. We're having more blasts around the housing units in Iraq. And again, who benefits from it? Kibono? Well, I think you just said something. The only ones that benefit is the Zionist regime. We don't benefit from it. They do.
No, you're right. Right. And also, it explains the Afghan war that's been going on. Quite simply, you know, what's on the other side of Afghanistan? Iran. So we basically have Iran surrounded on both sides with being in Iraq and being with Afghanistan. Typical squeeze play. You know, so, you know, people fail to see that little strategic point of what's going on there. And also then we got, you know, NATO's moved its borders all the way up to Poland. So, you know, they're trying to basically do a containment. And then in the Pacific Ocean, you've got the largest fleet in the world, the U.S. Navy, providing containment to the Chinese. So, you know, that's what's going on. So how that's going to play out is going to be real interesting.
Personally don't see any kind of full-scale war taking place. We're selling more bombs, making more bombs. War is profitable. Threats, you know, tit-for-tat exchanges back and forth with Iran and so on and so forth. It's all designed, as Netanyahu said, for the first time, we have a formula that's worked beautifully after the 9/11 strikes. He said we have Arabs joining Israel for the first time. Instead of hating us, they're joining with us to fight Iran. That is the formula. Mine enemy's enemy is my friend. And this has always been their mantra. Now they've gotten Arabs, and we've got South American nations, all of these nations, opening up embassies in Jerusalem. This fulfills Bible prophecy. See, Jerusalem doesn't have to worry about being wiped off the map by Iran. They never said they would. They just said that Israel, the entity, will vanish from the scene in the future, and they shall. But it'll be God himself that rains down judgment on Jerusalem. I mean, this is humorous, you know. So Iran now, the headline is Iran threatens Tel Aviv, U.S. bases in the Middle East after killing of the Soleimani. Well, again, what do you expect? Sei bono? Chi bono? Who benefits? We know it's to their benefit to expand the occupation. And what are they doing, by the way? What are they doing while all this is going on? Tension is focused on Iran. They're condemning more housing. They're stealing more land in the West Bank, which Trump has said you can do. You do whatever you feel you want. I'm your president. I'm not America's president. I'll do what you tell me to do. They're doing it in Arab East Jerusalem. So what they're doing is, on a massive scale, they're killing people. They're moving them off their land. They're condemning their property and building new, quote, settlements, unquote. This is what people aren't watching. But Jesus said, watch Jerusalem. He didn't say, watch Tehran. Watch Jerusalem. Okay?
Right. And also remember when you mentioned earlier in the show here about Sharon. Remember that infamous quote that Sharon says, don't worry about what America says. We control America.
Yeah. That was on Yoher Israel Radio. He said that. Yeah, it was recorded. They know it. He said they know that we control America through the politicians. We control them through the banks. We control the Congress and the White House. We talk about Hussein. What was his name? Obama? Hussein Obama, whatever name they gave him before Trump. And here we go again with Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. Oh, we got a cowboy in the White House. Oh, we got a tough man in the White House. Well, the only thing that's changed is the fact that we've lost more American lives. There are more young children going over there to die or to come back wounded or maimed. And who's profiting from it? The evil fig tree. The state of Israel growing in stature and terror, in more missiles, more bombs than ever before. And so have we. You know, the Pentagon has now invented God knows what kind of new technological advances, kinds of bombs that can be employed in any situation. So, again, the arms industry, who owns that? It's growing, isn't it, Art?
Oh, the arms industry is, well, look at the defense budget. It's over $700 billion and growing. It's going to be pretty soon over $1 trillion per year.
Wow.
Right.
Sheesh. So you see this industry, and you see, the Lockheeds and so on and so forth, all the builders of aircraft, builders of bombs and so forth. The stocks must be going sky high right now, huh?
If you look on the stock market, yes, they're pretty high up there, that's for sure. Except for Boeing, which...
Boeing.
Yeah. After they filled up the company with H-1B visa immigration labor, mostly from India... Somehow they forgot they lost their technical ability to push, make a decent airplane. So we're finally seeing the end result of that. I actually remember going to a bidders conference years ago at Boeing in, Southern California. And they actually said to a small business, they says, get a $20 million contract and give us $10 million, we'll let you work with us. Mm-hmm. And who was doing that? It was an Indian director of engineering after he laid off all the American labor.
But all of this has stopped now under Trump. We all have America first, don't we?
Yeah. I haven't seen any change in that.
Oh, no? I'm mistaken. I've been reading the wrong papers then, I guess. I should read the, that's called the Kosher Conservative Times. That's what I should be reading. All these conservatives, as they call themselves now, kosher conservatives, I call them years ago, and then Michael Collins Piper started picking up on the term, but that's what they are. They talk about their kosher view of what conservatism is. They don't want to go back to the real America First policy, because America First makes America strong, not weak from within. And we don't want that. How are you going to destroy the old world order and build a new world order, you know, a company of nations in the end times that will join the league of the one world system and weaken America, create a one world currency, a one world digital currency, maybe? You can't do that if America is independent and sovereign now, can you?
No. Look at Google, look at Silicon Valley. It used to be American. Now it's basically pretty much H-1B visa labor. If we really want to fix it, people saying they can't fix the mess, you know, Amazon, another one. It's real simple. You want immigration labor, we won't stop you, but you're going to pay $100,000 per person per year. Okay? Bring in all the immigration labor you want. And then, wait a minute, they say it costs 3 to 4 times as much money to use immigration labor as American labor. Now you got the picture. That's all they would have to do. I mean, they could change, you know, stop this immigration problem overnight, just change the economics of it. But that's what the big fight is, you're seeing, you know, with Nancy Pelosi, you know, and all those people. They're getting filthy rich by putting Americans out of work. So in that respect...
Now, would you consider some of these to be impeachable offenses for both the White House and for the Congress itself?
I would consider them to be RICO offenses, racketeering, influence, and corrupt organizations.
Oh, even more serious then, huh?
Right.
But you're right. If you want to call them RICO statute, then you're right. It is racketeering. It is a conspiracy to commit fraud and to steal the American public, to commit war crimes. These are all racketeering enterprises, aren't they?
Right. I look at Joe Biden with his son over there in the Ukraine. To me, that certainly sounds like it would fall directly under a RICO statute.
I would agree.
Right. And I actually did some research. I sent you some information there about Leon Rodriguez, okay, who used to be the head of immigration, U.S. Citizen and Immigration Services under the Obama administration.
Right.
And he's he came from Cuba. He's basically of Jewish descent. He actually kept a picture of Theodore Herzl in his office that he obtained from his grandfather. Right. And then you wonder how you got some of these members of the squad into this country, and it's based still on this unmitigated immigration that was going on under basically the Obama administration. Then they actually researched it a little further, which I did, which goes back to the H-1B visa program, and you see who was actually pushing it, okay? And it really comes down to the Central Intelligence Agency. It's been a big, big part of this whole H-1B visa program. And somehow that's not even talked about, like it's a non-issue. You can see, for instance, in the New York Times article, what happened to Bill Clinton, he's playing India, how Hillary Clinton won the Senate race up in New York by going over there on a junket with McKinsey and their convicted felon, Roger Gupta. And shortly after that, all of a sudden, her campaign's being flooded with all kinds of contributions from Indian families in America paying the top contribution rates. And as a result, she won the New York race, okay? Mm-hmm. But I did further research on it, okay? And you see McKinsey, basically Roger Gupta, was the head of the U.S. Indian Business Council. And they had their offices right there at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce down in Washington, D.C. Now, who else was there? Who was involved with the U.S. Right before Gupta was? It was none other than Frank Wisener, Jr., okay? The son of Frank Wisener, Senior, who was directly involved with the JFK assassination. So here this guy who works for Patton & Boggs was head of AIG. Remember the scandal with the mortgage-backed meltdown in 2008? And he was also the ambassador to India and also ran the U.S. Indian Business Council right before this convicted felon Roger Gupta did it. So if you do the research, you can actually see why we have this flood of immigration goes right back to the CIA, okay? And then you would look at it a little further, and, look at the JFK assassination. There's this book called Taken of America 123, which they call the Power Control Group. And where is it located? It's on the CIA's website, cia.gov.
What a coincidence.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Right. Amazing, isn't it? Let's take a call now from Mike in New York, 1-800-313-9443. Rick Adams with you today, as we have been. Thank you very much. Michael, come on up.
And all the best to you guys. Thank you, Rick and Art, and all the best to you guys for Healthy Prosperous 2020. Great information as always. I think CIA, what, is criminals in action?
Yeah,
as far
that's
as
right.
San Jose, Silicon Valley, okay, that term doesn't apply to that area anymore, San Jose. I used to go there for IBM back in the 80s. It was Silicon Valley, high-tech, physical hardware for semiconductor R&D. That's all it was. That doesn't exist there anymore. That's over, long gone. If anything, it's Software Valley now. And so that's another component that they took away from us to break us down from being independent. From the United States is going to be great again. It must be independent. And they took that technology ability away from us. And we don't,
right.
And obviously, you know, we really
right.
don't make anything anymore. And we used to make things of high quality back in the day.
It's all
now, regarding,
a part of the plan to bring America down. With Iraq, they destroyed Iraq through military action. With America, it's different. They're destroying America from within. They're doing it to us financially, economically, geopolitically, in terms of wars and so forth. That's how they're bringing this country down, you see?
The 10 planks of communism that generally cover their internal plan instead of physical conflict, control your money, Federal Reserve, create property tax, because Americans today don't even know property tax is illegal. It's called
illegal,
that's why they call
right.
our property real estate. Yep, it's called, they don't call our property property, they call it real estate. There's a difference there. And then, of course, take God away, make divorce easy, control the education system, flood them with drugs, promote homosexuality as normal as the top leading maneuvers that they had to do to us, and obviously they conducted all of that to this day perfectly.
Now, we know who the they is. It has to be those Iranians. It has to be them that did it.
The Christ killers. It's the Christ killers. You know, and it's great to hear them out there now calling themselves Christ killers, like they hate to be called Christ killers. I mean, thank God, because you know, Zionists is fine, but calling them Christ killers is the bullet between the eyes. That's what they are, and they are Antichrist in the flesh. They just don't have horns on their heads anymore, and
right.
and so they took away our ability for manufacturing power because the next war they planned on us losing. That's why they built up Red China. All that technology went to Red China, rose them up from pushing Rick carts up
wow.
to contending with us now in just 30 years, right? And so
yeah, you
planned
got it.
On China.
Yeah, on head. Wow. Our
China,
it sounds like an echo of... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I was just going to say that China is the proxy to control, take over the whole world. And but, of course, the crazy thing is they believe they can control that Frankenstein and the commie Chinese. That's the crazy thing. They actually think that they're going to be subservient to the Christ killers. That ain't going to happen because the commie Chinese are the most racist people next to the Zionists on the planet. They are extremely racist. And but now the good news with Trump is he bought his time, and he's given Red China a hard time. And he's not cooperating like Barry Satoru and Bush the Jr. and Clinton and Bush the Sr. have. Trump has definitely given them a hard time. And he's also, I think, really, the debt's never going to get paid back. How do you pay back trillions? It doesn't even exist on paper. And so I think Trump is just going to run it all the way up, get our military back on board to where it should be, so we got a chance at beating the Chinese. But his only next major strategic move must be to ally with Russia. Now, Rick, I hear what you're saying on Putin, but the facts are, he's letting Christianity take establish itself back in Russia again, and
yeah.
he's also not letting homos get married, and he doesn't let rap music in his country.
Well, and this is the deception, too, I believe, because you know what? It's so alluring. They're trying to be what America used to be, and they were the ones who killed hundreds of millions of souls between 1914, 1917 and 1991. When you think about it, they didn't just change overnight. New Lies for Old, Benjamin Gitlow's book, and Anatoly Golitsyn, there's something going on here. And I will tell you that America has changed roles now. We're the Esau, and they're playing the role of Jacob. And that's the deception, Mike, is don't believe
anything
anymore except the Bible.
That's all possible, so we can't drop our guard. But if he makes alliances with Russia, then we break Russia away from the alliances with Red China. You see? Now, that's a strategic maneuver that we need to do. But anyway, Rick, I appreciate it, gentlemen. God bless.
Oh,
keep up the great work.
Thank you. Happy New Year. All right, we'll take that break. We'll come back. We have another call. We'll take it. Rick Adams, Uncensored, here with Art in Philly. And we have a new theme closing today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Just a few minutes left. Art, you heard that great exercise, that polemical statement, a very true statement for the most part from Michael. What do you have to say to what he said? Sounds like you talking, you know.
Well, actually, I would agree with him that it has become a software technology group area, and they've took it over. I mean, almost every company there, the leadership is owned by people of Jewish descent. You know, look at Apple, look at Google, look at Facebook. you know, on down the line, look at Oracle, and you can see, you know, that basically they don't, you know, they once they got a hold of the industry, they don't want to hire Americans. They want to bring in cheap Indian labor because the idea is to get control of the industry and take it out of the country. And somehow the government thinks that's actually going to be a good thing for us and for them and their taxpayer. Yeah.
None of this that you talk about now has been brought up in, that I know of, in any serious presidential debate forum, has it?
No. It has been brought up by the Government Accounting Office, the GOA, saying it's a major threat to national security of this country. Mm-hmm. But somehow that just doesn't seem to be an issue talked about.
Well, that's why, you know, I say to Mike and others, you know, if you're counting on Saul to save you, you better forget it. He failed. And others will fail, too. The only thing that's keeping America going and America safe, as it will, in the very end, will be Jesus Christ and God the Father. And that's the only thing. And again, we go back to two kids, Esau and Jacob, in the womb, and they have a destiny to fulfill. When we get there again later, we'll talk more about that because it's so timely now. Don't trust Putin. Don't trust the central government of Russia. The people, that's a different thing. Don't trust communist China. Don't trust any of them. And most of all, don't trust Washington, D.C. It's untrustworthy. So that's the point I wanted to make in closing, folks. Here we are, first broadcast, Art, of the new year. And what will befall us, you know, economically, militarily, politically? And I think this is going to be a banner year. Either way, it's going to be a banner year for a lot of activity that we probably are not anticipating. But stay strong in the faith and never lose sight of your heritage. So thank you, Art, for your coming on today and sharing these thoughts. I think we learn a lot from you. So go to your website, folks. Go to Art's website, noplaceforcorruption.com. Okay, Art, any last closing statement?
Just hope everybody in RBM keeps up the faith. The cause is not lost. The fact that we're talking here, we have the freedom to talk here, the fact that we still have a Second Amendment that might have to be defended, I think we still have quite a few freedoms in this country. And basically with that, we can make the changes necessary. The most important thing is people to understand what's going on. And that's where I think your show is doing a great
job. Thank you for that word, Art. And God willing, we'll see you again next time in the future when you're free. Okay, hopefully. All right, thank you. You take care. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to close on this theme song from a movie. It's called The Summertime Killer with Christopher Mitchum, Robert Mitchum's son. Let's see if we can bring it up. Can we bring this one up, Ken? This is my close today. We're experimenting. It's called Run and Run. That's the song. Thank you all, and God bless, folks. We'll see you next week, God willing.
Primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast.
Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.